say, if they don't produce a continuing resolution or some type of spending bill by September 30th, the House shuts down. The House had been saying they don't want to do a continuing resolution. They want to do their own appropriations bills the way that the House is designed to work. You know, pass all 12. They'll go through the House, go through the Senate, signed by Biden, normal functional government. In the face of that, they have 2 weeks to pull all that off. Yet they're spending all of their time, you know, shouting at each other and saying they're going to impeach Biden and also throw McCarthy out of the speaker's chair. So they're not going to pass their appropriations bills. They're also saying, if you try to pass a CR, a continuing resolution that just keeps the government open, we're going to throw McCarthy out of the speakership. So the only two paths to keep the government open are those two paths. And their dysfunction is ruling out the former, and the Freedom Caucus is ruling out the latter. So it does seem like they are headed for a shutdown of their own making. Like, that they won't even be able to spin it in any serious way that it was Democrats' fault.
Hey, KABU members, it's time once again to vote and make your voices heard. KABU's 2023 annual membership meeting and board election is coming up on Saturday, September 23rd, from 1 o'clock p.m. until 2 o'clock p.m. at KABU's 55th birthday block party. Join us in person on Southeast 8th Avenue between Ankeny and Ash to celebrate KABU Community Radio. The board will provide highlights from 2023, projections for 2024, and preliminary findings from KABU's community survey. Again, that's KABU's 2023 annual membership meeting and board election on Saturday, September 23rd, from 1 o'clock p.m. until 2 o'clock p.m. in person at KABU's 55th birthday block party. For more information on elections, board candidate bios, and voting deadlines, visit kabu.fm/elections23. That's kboo.fm/elections23.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
On the next Voices for the Animals show, we're going to do a follow-up to our coverage of the ongoing problems at our own Multnomah County Animal Shelter. We will talk with more volunteers about what's being done and not being done since the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners promised a full investigation and improvements.
Honestly, why can't they just start to get things done? But somehow they can't. Somehow there is always a need for another review, always a need for another policy, always a need for another consultant. Just get things done.
Because pets in Portland deserve better, we are keeping the spotlight on the Multnomah County Animal Shelter on the next Voices for the Animals. Listen Friday, September 22nd at 10 a.m. only on 90.7 KABU FM.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. Up next is the KABU Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, Portland students take to the streets for the Youth Climate March. United Auto Workers strike against all Big Three automakers for the first time in history. And it's the beginning of Latinx Heritage Month. We celebrate ways to celebrate at the Multnomah County Library. Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, September 15th, 2023. I'm Josh Salem. Hundreds of students across Oregon walked out of class today, protesting in support of the climate. They're calling on elected officials to take action to protect our climate and their future. KABU's Althea Billings reports.
Climate change is not a lie! Climate change is not a lie! Climate change is not a lie!
Youth climate activists rallied in downtown Portland and across Oregon today, calling on Governor Tina Kotek to declare a climate state of emergency. In Portland, hundreds of students gathered outside City Hall, holding signs reading, "Act Now or Swim Later," "Climate Justice for Our Lives," and "Protect Our Soil, Stop Zenith Oil." That last one is a specific demand for Portland students. J.J. Kleinwolf is one of the organizers of the Portland Youth Climate Strike.
One of the climate villains in this hub is Zenith Energy. They have more than doubled the amount of crude oil and diesel transported in the span of 3 years alone. Currently, they transport over 370 million gallons a year, and they are trying to expand further. Last year, city government officials approved a land use compatibility statement, or LUCS, for Zenith Energy. They did so behind closed doors, without public comment, whilst having hidden communications with Zenith. This is not a democracy if city commissioners are not willing to listen to the people and they're abiding by the interests of fossil fuel companies. City commissioners can still rescind the permit, but they will not listen. After the approval of the LUCS permit, Zenith applied for an air contaminant discharge permit to the Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, in order to expand. Now it is up to the DEQ to make their decision. This is the only chance we have to regulate Zenith's operation in the CEI hub. Zenith's ongoing land, water, and air pollution are not only currently causing harm, but their risks, their operations pose immeasurable risks to the residents of Northeast Portland, our ecosystems, tribal sovereignty, and the public safety of the entire Portland community. Our demands are one, Governor Kotek declares a state of climate emergency, and two, that the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality denies Zenith's permit.
After speeches from students, protesters marched to Revolution Hall, walking behind a truck with the banner, Governor Kotek, act now. Trevor Suey, another organizer with the Portland Youth Climate Strike, explains.
During Governor Kotek's campaign, she promised to transition away from the use of fossil fuels. Instead, the Oregon State Treasury has increased its fossil fuel investments by over $1 billion in the past year. Time is running out, and that is why we demand that Tina Kotek declares a state of emergency now.
Yeah! If Governor Kotek takes up the call, Oregon would be the second state to declare a climate state of emergency after Hawaii. Student climate strikers say they recognize their place in history. One sign read, Goals for 2025, not 2035. Here's JJ again.
Throughout history, young people have consistently been at the forefront of transformative change. Kids like us have stood up against injustice, challenged oppressive systems, and pushed the boundaries of what was once thought impossible. History is filled with examples of youth as catalysts for progress. But why is the historical context so significant? It reminds us that youth activism is not a new phenomenon. It's an enduring and effective force for change. It's a continuation of a legacy of courage, passion, and resilience passed down through generations. It's a reminder that young people have always held the power to challenge the status quo and steer the course of history.
For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
United Auto Workers went on strike today, walking out of three different plants in the Midwest. UAW members walked off from a GM factory in Wentzville, Missouri, a Jeep center in Toledo, Ohio, and a Ford assembly location in Wayne, Michigan. It totals about 13,000 workers, or 1 in 10 U.S. auto workers. The UAW says other plants could strike on short notice, making it harder for automakers to anticipate. Workers are seeking wage increases, saying automakers made record profits during the pandemic without sharing any benefit with workers. They're after a 36% wage increase across the board over 4 years. They're also seeking to restore cost of living adjustments, ending pay tiers, a 32-hour work week, pensions for new hires, and pension increases for workers who have already retired. When the UAW negotiated in 2007, they gave up some of those things, hoping to help companies avoid financial trouble in the Great Recession. Union President Sean Fain is the first leader in the union's history to be elected directly by workers. The staggered strikes, some happening on very short notice, are his brainchild, hoping to stretch the union strike fund. If contract negotiations and the strike drag on, costs for both workers and companies grow. President Joe Biden weighed in, saying he respects the strike and urging both sides to return to the table for a, quote, win-win agreement. Negotiations are scheduled to resume Saturday. Today is the start of Latinx Heritage Month, and the Multnomah County Library is hosting free events to celebrate. KBOO's Althea Billing spoke with the library's bilingual Spanish communications coordinator to learn more.
Would you mind introducing yourself to start out?
Yeah, so I'm Patty Rincon, and I am Multnomah County Library's bilingual Spanish communications coordinator.
I understand the Multnomah County Library has some special events planned for Latinx Heritage Month. What can you tell me about them?
We have so many cool and free community-focused events that are happening this month, so from September 15th through October 15th, and we're really focusing on celebrating Latin American culture, food, comedy, musical performances, dance, kind of all these different integral parts of Latin culture.
And we're speaking here on Friday, September 15th. What are the upcoming ones that we look forward to?
So we're kicking off the list of events tomorrow, Saturday, at Kenton Library. We have an arepa making class. Arepas are corn dough patties that are really common in Colombia and Venezuela. Next week, we also have Comedy for Kids, Monday at St. John's. Then towards the end of the month, we have a Noche de Lotería. This is like a game. It's kind of like bingo, and it's just really fun for the whole family. And that will be on September 29th. We have South American music at Gresham Library on October 7th. It's a really, really cool band of Paraguayan descent sharing the music common in their Guarani, which is a South American indigenous group. Then October 14th, and it's Ballet Folclórico Estampa Mexicana. We'll see different kinds of common folk dances. It's a chance for people to come and not only watch, but participate and dance along with the music and the dancers.
What do you hope library goers get from these events?
So much. I mean, so we have a collection with over 55,000 items in Spanish and about the Latino community. So people can come and learn something new. A couple of the locations have some displays that focus on food, focus on music.
Can you go even if you don't have a library card?
Absolutely. The library is a welcoming space for all, and we're just really excited to be able to host these events for the community, for people to participate. You don't need a library card. All of the events are free. All you need to do if you want to learn more is go to multcolib.org, and that's multcolib.org.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
I'm just really excited to have these events and for people to come and enjoy. There's so much to do, and we're excited to celebrate Latin Heritage this month.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Patty Rincon, the bilingual Spanish communications coordinator at the Multnomah County Library, speaking with me about upcoming events that the library has planned in honor of Latinx Heritage Month. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy welcomes hardline Republicans' threats to oust him. The Wisconsin Senate votes to fire the state's top election official. And advocates call for more humane treatment of migrants. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Now they're turning their backs on the bipartisan budget deal Speaker McCarthy made with me just a few months ago.
President Joe Biden is critical of hardline House Republicans, accusing them of reneging on the federal debt limit deal, some seeming eager to shut the government down at the end of the month. This comes as tension within the House GOP grows. When asked about threats some right-wing members are making to try and oust him, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said he's ready to battle it out.
Threats don't matter, and sometimes people do those things because of personal things, and that's all fine.
The Republican-led House is struggling to pass what are normally bipartisan appropriations, with leaders this week canceling a vote on a defense bill. But McCarthy says he remains hopeful that Congress could pass a stopgap. Republican Nebraska Representative Don Bacon describes McCarthy as rightfully irritated.
There's no reason why these appropriations bills have been stood up by a few folks It's holding up the progress of the House, and it undermines our party.
The Republican-controlled state Senate in the battleground of Wisconsin voted Thursday to fire the state's top nonpartisan elections official. Megan Wolf says she's being targeted because election deniers didn't get what they wanted in 2020.
During my 12 years working as a nonpartisan election official, I've learned that when politicians on either side of the aisle are upset with me, it's usually because I will not bend to political pressure.
Wisconsin Attorney General Democrat Josh Call has filed suit, arguing lawmakers don't have the authority to oust Wolf and accusing them of undermining their elections. A federal judge in Ohio is set to hear oral arguments today in a lawsuit by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over the Biden administration's Medicare drug price negotiations. It's the first legal challenge for the recently announced program that aims to help seniors with prescription drug costs. Former Vice President and 2024 Republican presidential candidate Mike Pence said he would consider a woman for running mate, but refused to say whether he would dine alone with her after having made a promise to his wife years ago.
Look, I respect the way anybody manages their marriage, and I never want to feel like I'm imposing my values on anybody.
Immigration activists have declared today a national day of action, and across the country, they're demanding an end to migrant detention and deportation. Catherine Barnett with Freedom to Thrive contends the Biden administration hasn't lived up to a commitment for a more just and humane immigration system.
In a nation of immigrants, we need to, and we can, begin to find a better solution.
This comes as a federal judge in Texas has thrown out the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals policy, and that state continues to clash with the White House over tough immigration measures. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Washington State Supreme Court has reduced some impediments for bringing childhood sexual abuse cases to court. Lawmakers are considering completely eliminating the statute of limitations for these cases. Eric Tegetoff has more.
A recent ruling from the Washington State Supreme Court lowers the barriers for bringing some childhood sexual abuse cases to court. Justices unanimously ruled that the 3-year statute of limitation for these cases applies from the date of discovery of each element of the case. Seattle-based attorney Nate Roberts says, for instance, if someone in their mid-20s suffers psychologically because of childhood abuse, they have 3 years to file a claim against their alleged abuser. He adds there are more situations where the Wolf decision applies.
If they find out in their 30s, for example, that they were a ward of the state at the time of the abuse and the state knew they were being abused and didn't intervene, then they would have 3 years from the date they acquire that knowledge in which to file a lawsuit against the state.
Roberts says this makes more sense than applying the 3-year statute of limitation to the date of the abuse. Washington state lawmakers are considering eliminating the statute of limitations for childhood sexual abuse cases completely. Roberts says other states have already done this.
The insidious thing about sexual abuse and physical abuse to children is that the kids don't necessarily understand the scope or degree of harm, sometimes ever, but often until much later in life. And I think a simpler, more equitable rule would be to say that if you're the victim of childhood abuse, you can bring the lawsuit whenever you're ready to do so.
House Bill 1618 was introduced in the legislature this year and passed in the House, but died in the Senate. It will be up for consideration again in 2024. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear, with an overnight low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny and clear, with a high of 86. Today in history, in 1821, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica gain their independence from Spain. The quote of the day is not attributed. Anonymous said, "Democracy is a slow process of stumbling to the right decision instead of going straight forward to the wrong one." Surviving wildfire smoke is an ever-present threat. An air quality workshop on the Nez Perce Reservation offered tips to people how to protect their health. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As wildfire seasons get longer and more intense, some air quality experts are helping people learn more about how to protect their health, as Rachel Cohen of the Mountain West News Bureau reports.
About 15 adults take their seats in the classroom on the Nez Perce Reservation in north central Idaho. Jana Bulafentis invited them here this Wednesday night for an air quality workshop.
We're going to go over some things about indoor air, outdoor air.
Bulafentis works for the tribe's air quality department. Pollution on the reservation has come from agricultural burning and a nearby paper mill. But now she tells me wildfire smoke is the main problem.
This is what we're going to continue to see with climate change, is increased and more frequent wildfires, which if you have fire, you have smoke.
Mansell Nelson is with the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals at Northern Arizona University. He's critical of the longstanding public health guidance for avoiding wildfire smoke.
The general advice to go indoors always makes me cringe.
Why? Because the smoke doesn't stay outside.
In many cases, indoor environments are almost as bad as outdoor and can even be worse.
Bulafentis hopes to change that. So tonight on the reservation, she's offering a lesson on air filtration and eliciting some laughs along the way.
Okay, why we're all here today.
She's also giving away free portable air cleaners to tribal members. Recipients include families with young children who have asthma and tribal elders, those who have higher health risks from smoke. The cleaners stand about 2 feet tall and filter out more than 99% of smoke particles. Bulafentis ordered 242 of them using funds from a state emergency preparedness grant. People in the class talk about where they'll put the cleaner in their house.
Yeah, living room or the beginning of the hallway, right?
Outside, they pick up their own filters from the back of a minivan to take home. And next week, the air quality program will host another class on the opposite side of the reservation to hand out filters to more tribal members. I'm Rachel Cohen.
A cash prize fishing derby has proven to be an effective tactic against invasive bass in southern Oregon. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, it's all to help safeguard salmon prized by the Coquille tribe.
Almost 12,000 fish have been reeled in since last year by anglers as part of the annual Smallmouth Bass Derby. The event is hosted by the Port of Coquille River and sponsored by the Coquille Tribe, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and 3J Ranches. Brenda Mead, chair of the Coquille Indians, says this helps reduce a major scourge in local waterways.
They are just eating machines on the river, and they're eating those salmon smolt. Salmon, there would be a huge loss. Culturally significant to our ceremonies, to traditional foods, to just our way of life.
Mead says state conservation officials estimated a 99% drop in returning salmon in local waterways over a 10-year period. The second annual derby started in June and has been extended to October 1st. There are 80 tagged fish that can win anglers prizes, with amounts ranging from $50 up to $10,000. I'm Brian Bull.
Tribal leaders were among those to remember the life of former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson as a funeral mass was held this week in Santa Fe. Pueblo leaders say Richardson helped them prosper in many ways as governor and as a member of Congress by improving social services, infrastructure, healthcare, education, and they say he helped provide incentives for business development, gaming, and ensured religious freedom. Under his leadership, the state's Indian Affairs was elevated to a cabinet-level department. He passed away in his sleep in Massachusetts earlier this month at age 75. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Their proposed U.S. House budget for next year includes a $4 billion cut to EPA funding, a 39% decrease over 2023. Advocates say this would slow cleanup of toxic forever chemicals, or PFAS, in public water supplies and on military bases. In August, the EPA released a report showing over 400 public water supplies contain PFAS. The Defense Department has identified 700 contaminated sites. Brett Pivoteau has the details. In Maryland.
Environmental advocates say proposed budget cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency will slow cleanup of toxic forever chemicals known as PFAS in public drinking water and at military sites in Maryland and nationwide. The House Appropriations Committee's budget for fiscal year 2024 would reduce funding for the EPA by nearly $4 billion, representing a 39% reduction over the current year and driving funding down to levels last seen in 1991. But John Reeder with the nonprofit Environmental Working Group says, in inflation-adjusted terms, that cut is much greater.
If you account for inflation and look at constant dollars, this funding level would take EPA back 50 years to the early days of the EPA. It's a severe cut. It would devastate EPA.
In March, the EPA proposed a maximum limit for PFAS in drinking water of 4 parts per trillion. Over the summer, the agency released an analysis of drinking water and found PFAS levels greater than the minimum reporting limit in over 400 water supplies across the country. PFAS are commonly used in firefighting foam, with military installations and adjacent areas seeing high levels of contamination. The Department of Defense has identified 700 sites of concern, with many impacting groundwater. Studies have identified 8 contaminated military sites in Maryland. Reeder says the House budget proposal cuts $500 million from the DOD cleanup program.
For the House to come in and cut it another $500 million will just absolutely result in more delay, more potential prolonged exposure for people in impacted communities. And ultimately, it's short-sighted. The contamination is likely to continue to spread in groundwater, and PFAS is harmful to health at very low levels.
Research indicates PFAS exposure contributes to various health problems, including developmental delays in children, immune system suppression, hormonal disruption, and an elevated risk of certain cancers. For Maryland News Connection, I'm Brett Pivato.
Federal officials have ruled against a challenge from farm equipment makers, which prohibited farmers from repairing their own ag machinery. Dealers and product makers claim allowing farmers the right to repair their own emission systems could violate the Federal Clean Air Act, but the Environmental Protection Agency disagrees. Mark Moran reports from Montana.
The Environmental Protection Agency has upheld Montana farmers' right to repair their own equipment and says doing so does not violate the Clean Air Act. Montana farmers and ranchers joined with the National Farmers Union in writing to the EPA to oppose equipment manufacturers and dealers who claimed farmers shouldn't be working on the emission control systems on their high-dollar machinery. The Farmers Union said the dealers cited the Clean Air Act as justification for limiting the right to repair their own gear. The EPA has sided with the farmers. Montana Farmers Union President Walter Schweitzer says the last thing a farmer or rancher wants to do is run afoul of the Clean Water Act.
It's quite frankly the opposite. What EPA wants and requires is the equipment manufacturers to give the farmers and ranchers and the equipment owners the tools so that they can maintain their emissions.
The right to repair movement isn't limited to farm machinery. Many states have legislation pending or have taken action on a person's right to have access to the tools they'd need to repair anything from smartphones and wheelchairs to e-tablets and heavy equipment. Schweitzer adds, when it comes to farming in Montana, waiting for an authorized tractor dealer to come to his farm and fix a piece of equipment can mean the difference between harvesting a crop before bad weather hits and losing it.
Well, that happened to me. I was haying, had a tractor hooked to my baler, and I had a fuel sensor that was failing. And so it was shutting my tractor down randomly. So here I am. I've got hay in a windrow ready to bale. Rain could wreck it. And I don't have a tractor to bail.
The ruling by the EPA requires dealers to provide necessary software to farmers, allowing them to diagnose and fix their own farm equipment emissions issues. In this case, Schweitzer says, being able to do that would have saved him a $5,000 fuel sensor repair bill. Mark Moran reporting.
Many people in flood-prone areas of Lagos, Nigeria, would like to relocate within the city. Rather than moving somewhere far away, they prefer to stay near friends, family, and jobs. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the huge coastal city of Lagos, Nigeria, rising seas and more extreme storms put millions of people at risk of flooding.
And so I was expecting that people would want to move, especially when I was talking to young people.
That's Susan Aiko of the German Institute of Development and Sustainability. While a graduate student at the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry, she surveyed about 350 Lagos residents. She asked about their experiences with flooding and if they'd consider moving in response to the threat. More than two-thirds said that they're willing to relocate. But most of those who said that they'd consider moving did not want to leave Lagos. Many have family, friends, and jobs there.
Over half of the people who I surveyed, they expressed intentions to relocate within the city.
Aiko says there are lots of news stories about how climate change will increase migration to the U.S. and Europe. But her research indicates that many people, if given a choice, would prefer to move to safer areas nearby. So she says it's important for cities to work to prevent flooding and to support people who need to move but want to stay close to home. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 15th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Leuschner and Michael Fotakis. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegetoff, Mark Moran, Brett Pivato, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.